lot of the value of business mentorship is the ability of the mentor to personalize their advice. Maybe we could actually use ChatGPT to make this happen. And it turns out it really, really can.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In 2024, you don't have to look hard to find someone who will tell you that artificial intelligence and large language models are going to revolutionize the way we work. If you've used GPT-4 or Copilot to write your emails, do some coding, it's easy to get carried away. But if you're running a business in a low-income country, it's about far more than these tasks. But how useful is AI for firms in developing countries today? Rem Koning of Harvard Business School is one of a team of researchers who recently created an experiment to discover how entrepreneurs in Kenya could make use of generative AI. He joins me now. Rem, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Really excited to be here and talk about AI development in firms.
A lot of people get very excited talking about AI at the moment. And they talk about these massive investments of billions of dollars and huge data centers that you can see from space, years of research. Can this sort of thing be relevant in low-income countries?
Yeah, I actually think it's probably more relevant in low-income countries than in high-income countries, despite some of the talk you hear otherwise. And I think the reason is we have a really good example of a similar technology that required decades of investment, was transformative. I mean, that's the iPhone. Steve Jobs launched the iPhone in 2007, and it takes off like a rocket. Obviously, we all have them in the US and the UK, but the impact of the smartphone in developing countries has been massive. Everything from this wonderful research showing it helps people better discover the prices they should sell their products at. If you go to India, Togo, Brazil, you're going to see everybody has a WhatsApp account, right? And they communicate with friends and they sell over WhatsApp and they can access markets. Tons of emerging research showing that this sorts of technologies allows these firms to learn things and entrepreneurs to learn things that they couldn't have learned otherwise, right? They suddenly have access to all of Wikipedia, access to business training manuals online. And so I'm really excited similarly for generative AI. Now that the sort of foundation's been built, I think the place is potentially going to have the biggest impact is exactly in these emerging markets.
Instinctively, we can understand how AI might make us more productive, but what research, what evidence do we have so far on that? What sort of tasks do we have evidence that it does work in that way?
Yeah, so I want to be careful in terms of what we mean by AI. So I'm going to go generative AI. We'll just sort of be a little loose with the terms, but generative AI. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, ChatGPT is a year old, a little over a year old, which means how much time have we really had to collect evidence? What's amazing is researchers have rushed on this just like the tech industry. And there's now probably half a dozen studies looking at what sort of tasks generative AI is particularly useful for. Mm-hmm. So there's a study with call center workers, I believe in the Philippines, by some of my colleagues at MIT and Stanford, really shows that generative AI provides really good suggestions that help call center workers do their job better. Like shockingly better. They learn faster. They can respond to people's needs better. Other work showing it works for BCG consultants. Some of my colleagues at Harvard Business School with a very large team did an amazing study where they had consultants sort of do their example tasks of what they do in their consulting work. And it could improve and help them come up with better consulting recommendations. In our own work, we're actually going to entrepreneurs in Kenya. So I think people who own a car wash or run a farm, and we're basically building them a business mentor. And we find there that it can be really effective. Also, sometimes it can backfire too.
Why might we think that generative AI would be a good way to build a business mentor?
Great question. I think a year and a half ago, if you said, let's use AI to build a business mentor, I would have laughed out loud and dismissed the idea out of hands, just completely. I'm like, oh my God, what a waste of time. I think the big shift that we saw with ChatGPT was that it could handle so many different edge cases, so many different questions, and it didn't need a lot of fine tuning to get there. So if you just go up and you use generative AI to ask a question, the responses are pretty good. It sometimes hallucinates, it sometimes makes stuff up, but just for a shocking range of tasks, it seemed incredibly capable. And that's important because we know from prior research on human-to-human business mentorship that a lot of the value of business mentorship, particularly firms in developing countries, is the ability of the mentor to personalize their advice for the person they're providing feedback, encouragement, advice to. And so this clicked with us, and I got to give Nick Otis, who's the lead author on this paper and a grad student at Berkeley, who just did an amazing job on the project. Mm-hmm. He started thinking, maybe we could actually use ChatGPT to make this happen. So we assembled our team together and put this project out and started just piloting and seeing, like, could this answer questions that Kenyan entrepreneurs would like help with? My initial reaction was, no way. There's just no way it can understand the needs of someone outside of Nairobi or someone in Mombasa. And it turns out it really, really can.
That's the good side of it. But we know from experience that when new digital technologies come along, we've seen this movie before. We say it's going to revolutionize work, and then it doesn't quite live up to it, and it takes a lot longer. What's the problem? Why is this harder than it seems?
I think I'll go back to our study a little bit on maybe one thing that we're finding that's really hard, which is that the work that's been studying what sort of tasks generative AI is good for is primarily focused on very well-defined writing tasks. So think back mm-hmm. to those BCG consultants, or think of someone working in a call center, or if you've used it in VS Code to do Code Pilot, those are places where it's writing and the output is writing, and that's really all you're doing. Also, a lot of those studies have focused on very well-defined tasks. So I say, I need you to write this marketing copy. Mm-hmm. Can AI help you do it better? And in those cases, it does a great job. The first stumbling block we find in our study is that when people are choosing the problems that they need to apply these generative AI tools to, it fundamentally changes what we find in terms of the effects on productivity. So to make it really concrete, in our study, we find baseline high performers, so entrepreneurs who are already pretty good, benefit a lot from using generative AI. They ask questions like, how do I improve my marketing on Facebook? Or what's something I should add to my menu to increase sales? And it can give them really helpful advice to improve their businesses. The issue is, for the entrepreneurs who are already struggling, mm-hmm. the AI actually makes them worse. They end up about 10% worse in terms of revenue and profits. And when we dig into the data, what we're seeing, at least from our early results, is that it's because they're asking just fundamentally more challenging questions. So it's like, my competitor opened next to me, they're charging 15% less, I'm already losing money, what can I do? And I think the answer is shut down. I'm not sure there's very good advice. And so the AI throws a bone that the person tries. It doesn't work. It ends up being costly. It drops their profits. They do even worse. And so I think there's this really interesting question when we move from these very controlled studies where we're giving people tasks to letting people, to use the fancy economics term, endogenously choose the tasks. I think there's going to be profound differences in the effects of AI moving forward. Once people start choosing tasks, one of the issues we might run into is, do they have the complementary skills and resources that are needed to put that action into advice? So if the AI says, what you need to do is go raise some money to expand your business, if there isn't a robust banking system or credit scoring infrastructure, that advice is going to be kind of moot. And so that's a classic reason technologies don't end up taking off as fast as we think they do, is the complements aren't there.
Let's look in some detail about how you did this research, because it's very interesting. It strikes me as very difficult research to get rigorous answers from. So first of all, tell me a little bit more about the small businesses in Kenya that you chose for this study.
To go back on the difficulty of the research, it's hard. The key is to find an amazing grad student. So I'm going to plug Nick one more time, and then I promise to stop embarrassing him. He made it really happen. And so Nick had the really clever insight that, going back to my phone comment, most of these business owners, at least many of these business owners, they're already using WhatsApp and Facebook on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So they exist online, which means you can find them online. So we basically ran a Facebook ad campaign looking for entrepreneurs, right, who are interested in taking some surveys that we'd offer. And they signed up through that. Once we recruited all those entrepreneurs, recruited a couple thousand of them that we surveyed, then we offered them the opportunity to participate in an experiment. And we ended up with a little over 600 entrepreneurs, half of whom got access to our WhatsApp GPT mentor. So basically, like how you chat with a friend, you chat with the AI mentor over WhatsApp, and then half got access to a World Bank PDF describing how to improve their business as sort of a control group, make sure we weren't getting any sort of placebo effect. The businesses themselves really range. So we have a lot of farmers. So ChatGPT knows a lot about chickens and how to raise chickens very, very well. I'd like to point out it's pretty amazing. People running small ITs like computer repair shops, clothing stores, barbers, really the gamut of businesses, of small businesses that you'd see in a place like Kenya or really any country. And that was one of the things we deliberately did, because we didn't want to focus on one particular industry or one type of business, because I think a lot of the sort of potential productivity effects of something like generative AI is its ability to adapt itself to all sorts of different needs. So we deliberately made sure that we had a pretty diverse set of businesses in our study.
And tell me about this AI mentor. How did you create it? What sort of advice did you train it on?
There's a big debate on whether these AI tools are trained on bias training data, particularly when it comes to the fact that most of the data it's trained on is sort of coming from the US, UK, other developed countries. There's definitely a bias towards English language. Mm-hmm. And so we were a little concerned when we started that it would say, okay, great, you own a car wash in Kenya, you should go to Sand Hill Road and pitch a bunch of VCs, maybe in 3 months to invest. And if you go to ChatGPT and just say, give me fundraising advice, it'll often return something like, go think about VC. Mm-hmm. The trick for us that we learned, and I think what a lot of other people are discovering, is you don't need to do complicated fine tuning. You don't actually need a lot of existing data. Some careful prompt engineering goes a long way. So we spent 3 months with an amazing team of RAs, basically fine-tuning a prompt that would sort of contextualize the responses to the setting for small business owners in Kenya. And that made a huge difference in terms of the quality of responses. It turns out the data it's trained on actually knows quite a bit about Kenya and Kenyan small businesses. And so the answers were really, really nicely tuned. So it knows things about matatu terminuses, like bus terminuses. It knows things about the sorts of cows that rear successfully in Kenya. It knows things about the local crops that I have no idea about. It knows things about prices. It actually is pretty good at sort of calibrating to the local Kenyan shilling in terms of the costs of different things. And so that was one of the things that was really surprising, was that basically 2 paragraphs of prompt engineering, a lot of careful testing, got us a long way in terms of improving the ability of generative AI to provide advice.
Yeah, it's an interesting and emerging story about generative AI, isn't it? That you can take an existing large language model and fine tune it and make it so much more effective for these specific applications. But let me ask you about the application now. Were your subjects in this experiment, were they allowed to ask it anything anytime they wanted? Or did you try and control what things they used it for?
We tried to guide them. So we sent reminders to use the tool and reminding them to ask business questions, right? We really wanted them to focus on things to improve their revenues or drop their costs, manage their employees better. But, you know, like when you're messaging with a friend, sometimes the conversations got a little off topic. And so there's some wonderful examples. One business owner was looking to quit smoking, and so asked for advice on the best ways to quit. And ChatGPT gave him a bunch of answers, which I thought was really wonderful. You'll see people maybe asking about relationship advice. And I think my favorite example of this actually is we still are allowing folks to use the tool if they want. On New Year's, a dozen or two people WhatsApp messaged the ChatGPT advisor wishing it a happy 2024 when the year turns.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. I recommend being nice to the AI. We don't know where it's going, so be nice now.
Yeah.
I think it really shows how much this is similar in some regards to a human advisor. They really treat it as having a relationship. And partly it's because it has context of the questions in the business that this person has asked in the past. So one of the things we learned from the study that was really exciting is just like how much people build on the questions they've asked in the past and the responses they've got, which is, I think, really different than some of the sorts of technologies and attempts at personalized advice that's been tried in the past.
And because those inputs are so varied and so generalized for your outcomes, I guess you're just measuring business performance here. You can't, on that basis, really measure individual tasks, can you?
Oh, great question. Yeah. So our primary measure is basically an index of revenue and profits, just business performance. And we had a bunch of questions, probably like 20, 30 questions asking about individual tasks. So everything from how you're using your time to how you're managing your employees to product innovation to everything. And we basically get nothing on any of them.
Huh,
and
right.
That was super depressing. As a researcher, finding these like null effects is always hard. Like we want to find significant effects. We hope it comes up. We got nulls. And we're like, man, this is really interesting. When we reflected on it and we started digging in, it's precisely the reason that you just pointed out, Tim, which is that of the 300 business owners who have the ChatGPT tool, maybe 5 are thinking about how to improve the management of their employees. Maybe 10 are thinking about how to do marketing. Maybe 15 are asking about financing. Maybe 20 are asking about agriculture. And so you have these small pockets all improving different margins of the business, which makes it hard to say exactly what the channel is. And I think this is something that researchers and policymakers are going to have to grapple with moving forward, which is that we really like this idea of a clean mechanism in the social sciences. It's like, if I do this, it changes this one channel and that makes an effect. With tools like ChatGPT, I don't think there's one mechanism anymore. There's just so many different ways it personalizes and can affect people that we might need to think about how we explain effects in a new and different way.
And you're sure that what's making the difference here is the AI and not the information that the AI is delivering, which they could get through other methods as well?
Sure is always a complicated word. But what I would say is that we see a lot of engagement with the AI. I think the information that AI is giving them is helpful. What we do know from a very large literature is that if I drop off pamphlets and books for small business entrepreneurs in developing economies to read, mm-hmm. they will not read them.
Yeah.
This is true not just for developing economy entrepreneurs, it's true for students at very elite business schools as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you just give people reading and let's say, do it on your own, 95% of people will never look at it. And so I think one of the things that's really interesting and is an open question that we still have is how much is that the ChatGPT conversational interface allows for standard information to be shared so that if we could really have these people read the PDF we distributed in detail, that would be equally effective? Or is it more about the sort of personalized nature of the advice that's given? And that's something we're still sort of looking into in the data that we have and are hoping to run more experiments on in the future.
One thing we can be sure of is that students in business schools really do engage with generative AI, don't they, Ray?
Yes, they do.
Now, tell me a little bit more about these results. As you've already said, it seems that the businesses that were already doing okay got better. The ones that weren't doing so well got worse.
That was pretty surprising to us, particularly because every other study that we can find on generative AI finds exactly the opposite.
Oh dear.
So that BCG study, that call center study, there's other work looking at people writing short stories and the quality of the fiction they write. Other work on marketing basically shows that people who are high performers benefit. So if you are a really good consultant or a really good call center worker, generative AI helps you a little bit. But if you were, let's say, the runt of the litter, if you will, right?
Yeah.
You were the consultant that just made it in and you're not working particularly hard. Generative AI really helps you. It makes you much, much more productive. That's true in the call center workers and for all these other studies too.
Yeah.
We find the opposite. And that was really, really surprising when we hit on that result. Sort of caused us to scratch our heads a little bit. And I think this goes back to fundamentally that in all the other studies I mentioned, tasks are assigned. There's one task you're given. Within that one task, they find this difference in performance versus in our setting, these entrepreneurs are dealing with a myriad of very complex, very difficult tasks. Most of the other studies really just focus on a text output. So you take the generative AI, you write something, that text output is what's going to determine your performance. In our case, the AI advice is going to the entrepreneur, but they didn't need to act on it. So it's entirely possible they could misread it, misunderstand it. It's entirely possible that the advice was very good and they went in the wrong direction. And so I think there's just a lot more avenues for differences in individual judgment to shape how that AI impacts performance. And I think also raises caution when we think about the sort of inequality impacts. There's a paper by Noy and Zhang, one of the first experiments testing generative AI, two researchers out at MIT. And they find when they give freelancers a bunch of very specific tasks that it reduces performance inequality. So the better performers did better, but the people who weren't as good to start with did even better. And they made an argument that's really been picked up in this generative AI literature that maybe generative AI, unlike some of the other technologies we've seen over the last decades, will actually reduce inequality. We'll see compressions of the wage distribution and like it won't be skill bias technical change. And this will be fantastic. I think our results throw a little bit of cold water on that.
Yeah.
I wish it was maybe different. When people are applying generative AI to the tasks they face and the different challenges they have, we find that generative AI seems to help folks who are already doing better than folks who are not. This opens up a bunch of really interesting research questions about how we should think about the impact of generative AI on things like inequality longer term. Because right now we've had these very controlled experiments, but we know the economy isn't that controlled. I think we've got many, many more years of research. Always good to hear as a researcher.
So if I can interpret what you're telling me, it seems to be that businesses that are well set up, where those business owners understand what they do well and also understand what they don't do well, and being given some advice on it, may have either the staff or the ability themselves to act on that or access to some kind of resource. Yes, that works for them. Businesses that maybe aren't set up so well and where people don't really know where they're going wrong, maybe Gen AI is not very useful yet.
Yep. It could maybe get useful. I think there's another possibility that's really important to entertain, which is that sometimes business failure can be good for the entrepreneur in the long run, mm-hmm. right? This is something I tell my students at Harvard Business School. I think it's true for some of these businesses in Kenya. And it's hard to shut down a business, but sometimes it's just too much competition. It's not right for you. You need to sort of shut down and restart. And so I do think there's an interesting question, and this is me musing about the future a little bit, of like, is part of the reason we see these performance declines that they're trying something, they're learning it's not working, but you're never going to, at least yet, listen to a WhatsApp robot mm-hmm. and say, okay, great, I'm going to shut down my business. I think that's something where the human to human element is still really important. I don't think, you know, I would quit my job on the advice of ChatGPT quite yet. Maybe we'll get there in 5 to 10 years. But I think there's a really interesting question of if it's actually helping the high performers and the low performers learn about the sort of quality of their business, it's entirely possible that learning your business just isn't that good can be useful, right? And lead to the sort of hard but exciting part of capitalism, which at the end of the day is we want the successful businesses to thrive, the bad businesses to close, and those people to go find an amazing new job or start another business with more potential. So I think interpreting these effects still very much open in terms of what the impacts are for economic growth and productivity.
So the best AI business mentor in the future might be one that says, looking at the work of Joseph Schumpeter, you should close down your business and release the capital and get on and do something else instead.
Yes. Really hard to say when I'm reading the transcript logs of these business owners, because yes, all you want to do is help them. And we see on the more positive case, a lot of the recommendations end up being like, go open another store in a different location. Mm-hmm. And you'll see people thinking about how to deploy their capital more effectively. I think we have to be honest with ourselves and also think about how can AI help people make those difficult decisions, like shutting down their business or moving to a different city. I think a lot of really exciting research remains to be done in that area.
Given that at the moment we can't make a generative AI that gives the best advice in every context that it possibly could, should we be thinking, all right, let's put all our resources into making a better AI mentor for these business? Or perhaps is there an opportunity to say, well, Gen AI can't do it, and that's perhaps because those skills don't exist within the business entrepreneurs, maybe we should put more effort into just training them.
Right. I'll take the easy way out. So I think a lot of what we're showing is that you need to do both.
Yep.
And so one thing I'd say on the generative AI front is that I don't think these are going to be monolithic models.
No.
Right. One of the things that we're learning and we've been playing with is that I think you're going to see a mentor for chicken farmers emerge, mm-hmm. probably from some private sector startup that says we're going to be the farming AI advisor. And what would be exciting to me, at least about that startup, is then you can start imagining adding the things that you were talking about, Tim. Training, financing, alongside the mentorship and the knowledge to start building out those complements. I do a lot of work on technology startups. And one of the big things you've seen is this sort of model in emerging markets without the generative AI. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to sell to retailers, right? So I own a small bodega or whatever it is somewhere in India, a Kirana store. You're seeing a lot of companies have gone in and said, okay, we're going to provide you credit. We're going to help you do inventory management. We're also going to sell you the supplies that you need for your store. And we'll do it all in one centralized app. Those have seen a lot of success. Companies like Katabook, companies like Matsub in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really interesting is now imagine if those are also providing mentorship and advice and basically business education at the same time through conversations with colleagues and business leaders. It's something we're really starting to see. I heard of one example of a business mentor for liquor stores, and they can mm-hmm. dramatically sell how much beer they sell. Now, the welfare effects, I'm going to pass on that, but I think it's sort of indicative of what I think the future will look like, which is it's not going to be pure play Gen AI. It's going to be bundled with the necessary complements so that the entrepreneurs, all entrepreneurs, can succeed from that advice.
We already have policymakers working with NGOs in these scenarios, trying to improve businesses, trying to improve human capital in these situations. Remen, it strikes me as quite an exciting opportunity as long as we get the AI portion of it right and understand that they're not perfect yet. They learn by doing, that we need to develop them and work out what's going on. Doing the sorts of experiments that you're doing here and not just assume they're going to solve every problem, but a great opportunity.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the big one is policymakers need to get much more comfortable with experimenting. Mm-hmm. And of course, as someone who loves running experiments, I'm going to say that. But like, just to give some background, I said I wasn't going to talk about Nick, but I'm going to talk about Nick one more time.
Go on.
Nick pulled this project together over the last 9-10 months. And our team was Nick, one engineer that we hired with a couple of support staff, a team of four other academics, a couple of grad students, two RAs. I'd say no more than 10 people, definitely. And in terms of people with technical skills, two people with like sort of actual programming skills. Mm-hmm. And we were able to, in those 10 months, build a WhatsApp-powered chat mentor for Kenyan entrepreneurs and then do a rigorous RCT evaluation of it. I say that because I think there's a version, back to your big investment question, where people think they need to fine tune a big model or hire 10 AI engineers. Mm-hmm. For tens of thousands of dollars, you can build something like what we built and deploy it at scale. And so I think it's something that more people should just be experimenting and playing with, because the costs of deploying this generative AI technology are low, and they're getting lower and lower every day.
That's very exciting, Rem. Good luck with the future. As you say, there's a lot of work to be done on this. So I look forward to talking to you again about the next stage of it. But for now, thanks very much.
Thanks, Sam. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
If you want to read about this, the paper is called The Uneven Impact of Generative AI on Entrepreneurial Performance. And the authors are the famous Nick Otis, Rowan Clark, Solène Delacour, David Holtz, and Rem Koning. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find us there. And our past episodes, as ever, are at voxdev.org.